Down south, they say it's the economy, stupid. Up here, we say it's the economy, eh? And this is Political Economy Radio, a progressive take on economic issues in Canada and beyond. My name is Michał Rozwodski, and welcome to the show. Today's episode focuses on what else but the recent Alberta provincial election that saw the Social Democratic NDP sweep into power after 44 consecutive years of conservative rule. To gain some perspective on this rather remarkable result in Canada's oil and gas heartland, I talked to a campaign insider and a longtime analyst of Alberta's political economy. My first guest, Adrian King, was Rachel Notley's chief of staff during the election campaign and was just announced as the new premier's deputy chief of staff. She worked for the Alberta NDP since before the 2012 election and saw the campaign from the inside. My second guest is Ricardo Acuna. Ricardo is the executive director of the Parkland Institute, Alberta's alternative political and economic research institute. We spoke about the economic situation in the province, the place and role of the oil industry, as well as the challenges facing the new government. First off, again, congratulations on a successful campaign and your new post as deputy chief of staff. I want to actually go back a bit at the start. You started working for the NDP a few years ago in Alberta. What kind of foundations were laid for this campaign going back these few years?
I started here just before the last election, actually, before the 2012 campaign, which was, I feel, a pretty strong campaign for us in a lot of ways. We laid the groundwork. We were competitive in a lot of seats that people didn't expect us to be competitive in, including seats in Lethbridge. We did really well in a couple of seats here in Edmonton that we did expect to pick up and right up until the last week of the campaign when all of the Lake of Fire stuff started happening. You know, there were a lot of possibilities for us to make larger gains than we actually did in that 2012 campaign. So I would say that the party had very much begun a long process of professionalizing. Some would say, you know, that goes back to, you know, before the 2008 campaign, 2004, when the party hired its provincial secretary for the first time since. You know, so it was a long process of kind of professionalizing the party, getting ready for this, but certainly it really kind of picked up in the last 3.5 years.
What was it about the last 2.5 years and about that time that, you know, that allowed it? It seems like the NDP, you know, already even going into this campaign saw itself as at least, you know, the opposition in making the strongest possible opposition, if not someone, you know, that's competing for government rather than, say, the Liberals or any of the other parties that aren't, you know, on the conservative side and right, like Wildrose. What is it that allowed it to see itself that way?
Well, I think, first of all, the work that Brian Mason did to kind of lay the groundwork. Brian is an exceptionally quick and funny politician who a lot of people really liked. And certainly when he sat down as leader last April, we were already leading in the polls in Edmonton. I think part of that was, you know, a little bit due to some disarray in some of the other parties. But also just because we worked really hard to ensure that every time we put someone up on something, every time an MLA was speaking, every time we did a news conference, we were talking about issues that matter to people in ways that matter to them. Because I think a lot of times, you know, politics ends up being, you know, kind of fights about the Speaker of the House or whatever, but we really focused on talking about what mattered to people in ways that made sense and that mattered to them. And I think that does make a difference.
What are some of these issues and how did you go about picking them?
Sure. So, I mean, honestly, what it comes down to is, you know, here are the things that the PCs over 44 years of having been in government have just absolutely failed to do. They've, you know, they've messed up healthcare, right? We've got private delivery of seniors care, which means that too many seniors fall through the cracks at the continuing care facility that they live in and end up back in the hospital, which leads to overcrowded emergency rooms, which leads to basically every problem that we see in our healthcare system. So, I mean, talking about that and then doing the background research to make sure that you have the numbers and the FOIP, the Freedom of Information documents, to back yourself up, but then not talking about it as a series of numbers, but talking about it as how that feels and what that means to you as an Albertan showing up at the hospital and realizing that, you know, that you're going to have to wait with your very sick relatives for a long period of time. Instead of talking about, you know, total hours of ALC bed usage, you talk about what people experience.
What do you think are going to be the greatest challenges now to implementing the basics of the program? And now when you do actually have to turn the stories into numbers to some extent, and we're talking about, you know, both the taxation side and the spending side, and things like, I mean, there was the promise for the $15 minimum wage that's actually going to, you know, force business to change its ways as well, right?
Yeah. Well, I think for most governments right now, the biggest challenge is the healthcare file. It's big, it's complicated, and it's the thing that people really, when it comes down to it, probably care about the most. I think, you know, there has to be a way to do it better. And we campaigned on against cutting $1 billion out of healthcare. So that's a starting point, is to, you know, not create total chaos. And then from there to make some really strategic investments in things that will make things better. So healthcare is obviously one. And then I think the challenge that Alberta is facing is certainly stabilizing our resources so that we don't face a budget where, you know, we go from the boom and bust, the revenue roller coaster we always talk about. And I think there are lots of ways to look at doing that, but it's a challenge, and it'll be an interesting challenge for us in the next 4 years.
Do you feel like you have enough sort of trust or enough of a sort of cushion from the public to sort of get through the first while? I mean, you're already, like you said, you're already facing a tough budget this year with a deficit regardless. I mean, and it's one thing to get over the fact that, you know, budgets can be in deficit, especially in these really big economic crises like you're going through in Alberta, but another thing to see how this plays out and, you know, how this large mass of voters that swung to you is going to take this.
I think we do. I think that what we saw in the election was that people overwhelmingly felt that they could trust Rachel in a way that they did not feel they could trust the other leaders that were asking for their vote. And so I think, you know, we have a lot of work to do, and I think there's a lot that we'll have to talk to them about. And I think that's one of the things that people actually liked about our campaign, was that we were also promising a new way of doing things, a new way of, you know, talking to people about their politics and about, you know, honesty and ethics in government, which I think is something that matters to people after, you know, 44 years of one party being in power here in Alberta. So I think we have the capacity to talk to Albertans about the decisions that we need to make. And I think they are excited about Rachel's leadership, and they do trust her.
Going back again a little bit, I mean, I'm always interested in the economic aspect as well. How did this oil price shock, which I think was still unexpected for most people, including in the industry and everywhere. How did this oil price shock change your plans for the election, the NDP's plans for this particular election?
Well, I think, you know, of course it makes a difference when you're talking about wanting to do better on the, major services that the government provides. Because I think Albertans are not happy with the state of healthcare and education particularly, but other services as well. It suddenly, you look at what you can actually promise to accomplish and you have to kind of cast about a little bit to decide, you know, what can we do that is both responsible in terms of responsibly providing and maintaining and improving these services, but also is responsible in terms of, not breaking the bank in what, was a rather surprising and sudden downturn in oil prices, which fund over 30% of our social services. Obviously, that's something that no one likes, but it's a reality of how our finances are structured at the moment. So we know we need to, move in other directions potentially, but it did make a difference.
Yeah, I'm guessing that from what I understand, long term, the idea is to try to change this and not have the budget be so reliant on oil revenues.
For sure. I mean, the first step, frankly, is just an actually progressive income tax. And the corporate tax increases, and then we need to look at where to go from there. And we've proposed a resource owners rights commission, which will take a transparent look at royalties to make sure that Albertans are actually getting a fair share for the resources that they own. So that's the next place we'll go. Obviously, that'll be working with industry to make sure that we're protecting jobs and protecting the economy of Alberta, because we, at the end of the day, we know that people need jobs for the economy to function. And if we're, if our economy isn't competitive and viable, then we lose jobs. So,
is the NDP prepared for the challenges coming from the oil industry that that inevitably will come up whenever there's, talk of a royalty review or talk of changes to taxation, anything like that? We've already heard, the TSX fell, oil price stocks fell. Are you ready to withstand this kind of pressure coming from big oil?
Well, at the end of the day, I think, we ran on a really clear platform and Albertans voted for that platform. And so, what this comes down to is Albertans have asked us to implement the policies that we ran on, and we will work and dialogue to make sure that the decisions we're making are fair and balanced. But we also have a responsibility to carry through on the promises that we've made. And I think the reality is that Albertans overwhelmingly supported the platform that Rachel ran on. And so we need to just continue to have that conversation, because that's what that's all about, is what Albertans want for the future of their province.
All right. Congratulations again. And best of luck in the next days, weeks, months.
Thanks so much. It was good to talk to you.
That was Adrian King, now Deputy Chief of Staff to Rachel Notley. Next up, my conversation with Ricardo Cuna of the Parkland Institute on the Alberta economy and the prospects of the NDP in power. Well, Ricardo, I wanted to get to the recent NDP election win, but maybe in a bit of a roundabout way by putting it in the context of the economic situation, because I think that definitely had an impact on the way the vote went. What is the state of Alberta's economy today?
Well, we're currently in one of those downturns that have been so common for us over the course of the last 20 years, where We've had a drop in the international price of oil, and that has had direct impact on the state of the economy directly in terms of how we're seeing oil companies having to cut back workforces and people investment in the province actually slowing down, but also in terms of government revenues. The provincial government in Alberta has been significantly dependent in recent decades on oil and gas revenue to fund its ongoing core programs. So the impact of the price drop of oil internationally was about a $7.5 billion hole in government revenue. So that combination meant that we were actually heading into this election quite down in terms of both the general economy, but also in terms of government's ability to fund and pay for programs and services.
Is it fair then to say that the NDP is dealing with a budget crisis coming into office? And to what extent is this sort of, you know, an external thing? And to what extent has it been produced by the policies of governments up to this point?
Yeah, I think it's more than fair to say that the NDPs are inheriting an economic ship that's in trouble and are inheriting a bit of a budget crisis. And it really is, in typical Alberta fashion, a combination of external and internal. Externally, like I said, it's very much around, it almost exclusively revolves around the international price of oil on world markets. Internally, it's a result of the structure of the Alberta government's budgets and finances, where through reduced taxation, through a move to a flat tax away from progressive taxes, through dropping corporate taxes, the government has become increasingly dependent on oil and gas revenues to fund its operations. So when something like this happens and the price drops on the world market, the government just simply does not have the money it needs to fund its program and services. So it's a little a result of internal structures combined with the external pricing factors.
And what kind of difficulties specifically for Notley and the NDP does the situation, the budgetary situation, present in terms of some of the key promises too, like raising the corporate tax rate or raising more revenue? What kind of counteracting pressures can they expect?
Well, and we've seen some of this already, right? In the lead up during the election, in the lead up to Election Day, we started to see a lot of fear statements coming from Alberta's corporate elite, from the oil and gas sector, oil and gas CEOs, a lot of fear-based statements about if they raise corporate taxes, we're going to stop investing. If they raise corporate taxes, we're going to have to cut jobs. A lot of those kind of statements. So even before the election, there was starting to be this kind of pushback. The Notley government, and Rachel Notley in particular, has done a very good job in the early days post-election of actually reaching out to the oil and gas companies to kind of reassure them and calm them down and tell them that things will be predictable and stable and all of that. But those pressures will persist, and there will be fight back to particularly the corporate tax move and the move to increase royalties, both of which, well, not necessarily to increase royalties, but to review them, both of which were key planks in the New Democrat platform. And the corporate tax move in particular is one of the ways that the ND government can actually alleviate some of the budgetary pressures within the government.
And do you think these steps that are being advocated that were part of the platform are going to be enough to patch the holes? I mean, the hole is quite large as it is for this year, and the oil price outlook seems to be, you know, not super duper.
Yeah, it's a significant hole. We've known here at the Parkland Institute, we've known for a while and have been saying for a while that Albertans are under tax, that we haven't been paying enough in taxes personally or in corporate taxes to actually fund the programs that we've prioritized and said we want. So there will need to be a period of adjustment. There will need to be moves on the individual tax base, on the corporate tax base. And even with that, it will take some time to get back up to a level where the budget is balanced, right? We're looking at probably 4 to 5 years before the budget is balanced, and that's assuming the price of oil starts to go up again. So it's not going to happen overnight, and it's not going to be enough. And I think it would be irresponsible and dangerous for the new government to actually say, okay, we're going to adjust taxes to a level where we can take care of this hole all at once. So they did in their platform lay out a kind of a process for the kind of changes they would make to individual taxes, the changes they would make to corporate taxes, and that's what I think we're going to see movement towards.
And what's your take on the royalty review? Because you mentioned that before too. How important is this? Again, what kind of pushback will there be on it? And is this, you know, also a key sort of plank?
This is a key plank, and it's, again, it's something that many, many Albertans have been expressing frustration with for quite some time. The reason that a previous royalty review happened in 2007 was because during the Conservative leadership race in the year previous, all of the people running for leader had promised to review royalties. There was this public sentiment, this public energy behind it. When the new royalty regime was implemented in 2009, there had been such a pushback from industry in the lead up to that, that the new royalty regime actually didn't make any difference at all in terms of more royalties. And at Parkland, we did a study this past week during the election that we actually lost money compared to what existed before 2009. So I think the government will have to do this. I think they'll have to move very carefully, move very openly, include the energy industry in the process from the start, but make sure that it's an open and transparent process, including experts from around the world on what is the right amount to be capturing of our oil and gas wealth. I think Albertans are behind it. I think it was a popular part of the platform, and I think it would be dangerous for the government not to proceed with a review.
And what kind of, I mean, we talked about the pressure from the side of the business sector already on the government. What kind of pressure in the other direction can the NDP count on, you know, that will hold it accountable to its promises, but also, you know, push it to keep going, especially in light of, you know, what you mentioned were already quite strong pressures from the side to, you know, to moderate things?
Absolutely. I think there's two sets of pressures that will be forthcoming. One is I think Albertans who've been working behind and organizing behind the New Democrats in this province for a very long time, you could say the base of the party in Alberta, have fairly high expectations of having finally elected a New Democrat government, of what will happen to healthcare funding and education funding and social services and democracy and all of these things that, you know, they've been talking about for all these years. And I think that will be, as I said earlier, it will be very difficult for the ND government to kind of meet those expectations without upsetting the folks on the right who are applying pressure. So I think it'll be very difficult to walk that line. But I think it's important for these folks on the left to continue to have those expectations high and push to provide a counterbalance to the pressures coming from the right. There is also a different set of pressures that are going to start to come, and already have, from the environmental community around the notion of one of the platform planks for the New Democrats was to add more value to natural resources here in Alberta. And that was a controversial one with the environmental community, who don't necessarily think that at this point in time, given the pending climate crisis, given the need to actually scale down fossil fuel use and production, that we should be investing millions or billions of dollars into infrastructure to encourage fossil fuel production, which is a concern about trying to encourage more value-added processing here. So I think that will also be a pressure. And oddly, and that's one issue on which the roles would be reversed, right? I think a significant part of the energy industry might be receptive to support to increase value-added here and shipping refined product as opposed to the environmental community who would be resistant to it.
And what about, you know, what about the labor movement and workers more generally, many of whom are, you know, dependent on the oil industry, not just working directly, but, you know, a lot of the indirect effects of the industry and sort of, you know, pushing the economy along. But on the other hand, you know, people see what the oil sands do to the environment and all that. Are they sort of caught in the middle of it?
I think they are, and I think there's some unspoken tension in the province between some of the environmental groups and movements and some elements of the labor movement on particularly on that issue, right? There's a lot of overlap in other areas around things like coal and that kind of stuff, but on the value added upgrading and refining in the province, I think that's one area of tension. That plank is very reminiscent to some of the things that the Alberta Federation of Labour in particular has been pushing for in the last couple of years with a growing campaign to make sure that we're adding more value to our natural resources in province before shipping them out. And again, some tensions there around the role that Energy East as a pipeline can play in that. For exporting refined or upgraded product, or even for exporting bitumen as long as it gets refined or upgraded in other parts of Canada. So there are going to be ongoing tensions there between the labor movement and the environmental movement. But I think on this side, the ND platform plank actually came down on the side of where the AFL in particular has been on the issue.
Looking more in the long term, is this a government that could start to rethink the place of oil in Alberta's economy and, you know, start to diversify away and try to think about slowly, you know, scaling down the tar sands? Or is that really a long ways off? What kind of movement, what kind of pushback would it take to...
The oil industry in Alberta is so entrenched, both in its economic power and its political power. You know, about one third of our GDP in the province comes directly from oil and gas activity. Up until the crash of world oil prices, about one third of government revenues came from oil and gas. About 15% of our provincial workforce is directly employed by the oil and gas sector. So it still has a lot of political control, even with an NDP government. There's so many steps that need to happen before these moves can happen. They would need to, for example, do things like let's get oil and gas money, let's get corporate money out of the political system, right? So let's limit mm-hmm. their political power a little bit by electoral finance reform. Let's get oil and gas revenues entirely out of the provincial revenue stream so that the government is not so dependent on revenues from oil and gas, but rather the government is dependent on tax revenues. Once those kind of things get done, then the party can start to look forward and say, yes, now let's talk about how we can make our overall economy less dependent on this polluting resource, right? How can we scale down production? How can we move forward environmentally? If they try to do that now, or try mm-hmm. to move on those questions too quickly, then the potential for a capital strike, the potential for the oil and gas industry to actively start working against the government would be significant. And you might see something like you saw when corporate Ontario started pushing back against Bob Rae and essentially made life impossible for the government economically over that first term.
Is that a possibility regardless, even during this, you know, even going along in this year, we've seen investment fall a bit, even just as a result of the oil price. But on the other hand, you know, oil sands projects are huge, multi-year, and you know, you can't, you can move a car factory, right? But you can't quite move an oil sands operation out of the province.
Exactly. But you can, I mean, you can slow down investment. You can, you know, slow down hiring. You can slow down expansion. And have that impact on the government as well. I think the advantage that the government has is that the leader, that Rachel Notley, has been spot perfect in her messaging. She's been on point with every conversation she's had, with every media scrum she's done. She's been on point in terms of trying to ease the fears of industry, in terms of sending a very calming message. She's gotten on the phone with oil company CEOs to send a very calming message, to saying, look, we want to work with you every step of the way. We're going to do these things because we have to. We're going to work with you. And I think that's had a very positive impact. But I suspect that that's also very tenuous. And at any moment, with the wrong move, with the wrong policy decision, it could go the other way.
All right, Ricardo. Thanks a lot for your time.
No problem at all. Thank you.
That was Ricardo Acuna, Executive Director of the Parkland Institute. That's all for this week. Talk to you all again in 2 weeks.